Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today, it's my great pleasure and honor to have as my guest Dennis Cooper. Those of you who have been listening for the last several weeks have heard shows with Amy Gerstler and with Jack Skelly that address the years at Beyond Baroque in Venice. And Dennis was perhaps the primary organizer of Beyond Baroque during that period. Dennis brought a whole sensibility to the organization. Dennis Cooper has a new book. It's published by Soho House. It's called I Wished. It's 125 pages long. But if you're like me, you'll be reading it over and over and over again, partially because one of the subjects is getting used to the idea of death. In the book, there's a person who once lived named George Miles, who was a central figure in each of Dennis's first five books, known as the George Miles cycle. Now, tell me about your relation with George Miles, Dennis.
I met him when I was in, it was a private school, but it was like high school years. I was 15. And he was the younger brother of a friend of mine, and George was at that point not. He became very, very bipolar and had a lot of problems. When he was not, but he was on LSD, and his brother said to me, like, you know, LSD. So can you go talk my brother down? So I spent the evening with him, trying to talk him down and getting him stabilized and stuff. And we just really bonded. So he was just this young kid. And we just had this very deep bond that lasted our whole lives. And he became very, very ill. It was called manic depression then. Now it's called bipolar. And later he became psychotic and he was very disturbed. And but we stayed very close. But it was a very complicated relationship because of that. And then eventually he committed suicide.
I've known Dennis for almost as long as I've been in Los Angeles. At that time, I didn't know that you were writing fiction, but you had talked to me about George Miles before he was ever a subject in the book. And what I remember best was your telling me a story about the two of you in a darkened room trying to see your faces in the mirror. You remember this?
Yeah, yeah.
And
it was a past life regression ceremony that my mother believed in that we did for fun.
So basically, yeah. But it was very intense, I understand it. Dennis is more or less the narrator, but the narrator sometimes switches places with George or is given a role, including a role by Santa Claus. Santa Claus asks Dennis Cooper to give a gift to George Miles. And I found this projection or version of Santa so amazing and so disturbing, because often Disneyland and places for children have entered your work. Most of your characters and you yourself are obsessed with amusement parks, but I'd never heard Santa becoming part of the regime. Could you talk to me about that?
I write in the novel that I wrote a novel and about George and that it was a disaster and I had to throw it away, which is true. So I, when I started over, I started just trying different tricks and things. I was just, because the other one had been very rigid and I thought, I'm just going to like improvise and things. Then the Santa thing, just because I, you know, it was just a combination of like thinking about what a curious concoction Santa Claus is and how sexless he is and all these things and what, who, and also that tied into the Heart is a Lonely Hunter thing, because I wanted to take the Heart is a Lonely, which is, you know, this benevolent, you know, giver who no one thinks has, in my version of it, which is not the real version, the no one thinks has any feelings or anything, it's just this kind of generosity machine. And so that's what Santa is, a generosity machine. So I just wanted to elevate that character to that point and then make him so powerful, and then also to give me a gift too, to give me the gift of being able to find a perfect world for George.
Now, Santa does tell the Dennis Cooper in this book, now none of your extreme violence, we don't want that. And Dennis himself mentions that he had not yet made the acquaintanceship of Sod and Sod's writing, and except for certain dreams, fantasies, wishes about characters on TV shows, the violence is not typical of this book. And the book is asking essentially the question, what is imagination after the people you need, you know, and you love are no longer available to you? What is it at this point to imagine George Miles?
Right. Well, I mean, it's difficult because he was like a non-person. I mean, like I say in the book, I mean, he was like, when he was a little kid, he was a real person. I mean, I knew, and that's why I knew him when he was still a whole person. But when he became very ill, he became like these two extreme people, and then the medications would wed them together into this kind of artificial person. And one of the reasons why he and I remained very close, even though he basically alienated everyone in the world, is because I remembered who the kid was. I'd been very close to the kid, and we'd been friends for maybe a year and a half before puberty basically brought it on for him. And it's kind of, so I mean, that's who I was, like, that's George. And I think one of the reasons that's the person who's in there. And he loved the fact that I knew, you know, he wanted to be that person that I imagined him to be. So that was kind of our bond. It was like,
well, one of the things that I knew about Dennis Cooper at that time was that he had a gift for constructing a world around him. You knew the young writers of your time at Beyond Baroque, and I watched them, one and all, fall in love with you. Me too. I had never read the novel that comes up in this book several times, and the movie, The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. You see, I had no idea of who and what Carson McCullers was. People that I knew in my sort of experimental writing world didn't include her. She was Southern Gothic from A to Z. But you explained to me that in the movie, Alan Arkin had played a character who was another Santa Claus, a generosity machine. He's a mute. Dennis acknowledges that although he rarely cries, that when he first saw this movie, he was, this is the word he uses, blubbering, and for days, because of the desire and the impossibility of becoming a Santa Claus figure to the disturbed. But it seems that the whole George Miles cycle, and especially this almost epilogue-like novel to it, it's not part of the cycle. And I wouldn't say for sure even that it's a novel, but it's about living in the worlds that novels project, living in imagined worlds. And it amazes me that the whole cycle was there in you when we were so young, and as far as I knew, you were only writing poetry. I think you were keeping it a secret that you were interested in writing prose, and yet when you came to write novels, I think the first one I was aware of was, what was that extraordinary long prose piece? You also read it at a public reading. What's that?
My Mark?
My Mark.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was the introduction to what was to come. It's still extraordinary. And I think that what you've done in I Wished is invoke the dangers of wishing, of living in the imagination and having an imagination that's powerful enough that the Dennis in this book wishes first that death were his boyfriend, that death would take him over completely and allow him to live without dying. A complicated state of affairs. It's the state in which George Miles continues to live for you for the many years when you didn't know whether he was living or dead. And you were told by one of your teachers, what was his name, Bert?
Bert Myers.
Bert Myers, to stop it, that you didn't need poetry workshops, that you needed to get out in the world and to do your writing, and he sent you there. Amy Gersler also studied with him. He became something of a hero to me because I was never told to leave school. I stayed in school and school and school, and you went out to examine the process of becoming an artist. Could you talk to me about that?
I mean, I should mention this was facilitated by the fact that my parents had a lot of money. So, I mean, not everyone could do that. What I did. My upbringing was really ugly. And I mean, that worked in my favor in terms of like getting my parents to give me money when I needed money. I mean, I had some jobs and stuff, but so anyway, I mean, to do what I mean, to be able to go and do what Bert told me to do, I mean, which is what I did, which is basically just live for art, you know, which is what I ended up spending my life doing. I mean, I just have to say that, like, you know, I mean, not everyone could do that. I was very lucky to have, like, you know, parents to guilt trip or whatever to give me money. I don't know. I was never interested in school anyway. I mean, I went to Pasadena City College and I got to study with Ron Kirchy, who was like a huge influence on me and things like that. But I mean, I mostly just always like, you know, as a kid, I was super industrious. I was always making things and doing things when I was a kid. So it's just like having the life I wanted.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to KCRW's Bookworm. I'm talking with Dennis Cooper about his new book, I Wished. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Dennis Cooper about his new book, I Wished, in which Dennis's lifelong love of George Miles finds a fresh shape within the expansive capabilities of personal writing. Now, your book, I Wish, seems to be about both the danger and the power of wishing. Wishing here presents an ultimatum to the world, that it fulfill the wishes. It's a very interesting thing, because although Dennis Cooper appears in the book, and he is the Dennis Cooper I know. He is also the Dennis Cooper who was hit in the head with a hatchet and who had to recover in bed from near death. And so this marriage with death occurs early on, and it seems even before, as you say, you made the acquaintanceship with Sod, that death is at the center of what you do. But I would say that more than anyone else I know, you always knew who you are. I was a classical music kid, and you took me to my very first rock concerts.
Sparks.
You took me to see Sparks. And these two brothers, Ron and Russell Mayle, became best friends of mine. And we would go to the Whiskey or the Starwood almost every night. You were such a charismatic figure. It's a crazy question, but may I ask you how you think you became Dennis Cooper?
I feel like I've always been the same. I mean, really, when I was a kid, I like organized carnivals in my backyard. I built haunted houses. I had a theater in my attic that I organized. I mean, I was always somebody like just making stuff, either writing or drawing or organizing people to do things. It's just like, I've always been like that. And that never changed. So I don't know what exactly made me become a dark person. I mean, I'm not a dark person at all personally, but I mean, what made me so obsessively interested in that? LSD was a huge, I would say it really was a gigantic influence on me. It made me really understand. It made me experimental. Certainly who was interested in experimenting and in the experimental. I mean, absolutely. It completely threw me away from all the conventional things. But I don't know. I mean, I really always been the same, but I don't know why I became interested in like the dark material that I'm interested in. I don't know. I mean, I was like, you know, I had the axe thing in my head. There were a lot of serial killers killing boys at the time, and that interested me, but I don't know. I don't know why that came from.
I was, you know, sort of a lost boy who loved difficult books. Now, one of the things that, you know, astounds and impresses me about you is that you're now getting to work on your third film. When I met you, you had always wanted to be involved with movies. The choice, as I remember, was between editing a literary magazine, which you did, called Little Caesar, or opening a film revival house. And you chose the literary magazine. And now you're working with a collaborator, Zach Farley, on writing and directing movies. Now, you're my age, almost exactly to the year. And I've been doing this show. It's been a great honor and great fun for me. But for 32 years, you have embarked on one new career after another. Theater and puppet shows. When I was in Paris, I got to see one of these puppet-related pieces, and it was amazing. Now, one of the things that's amazing to me is, quite by chance, it was I introduced you to the person who could tell you about the suicide of George Miles. So I feel in certain ways, even when you've been away in Paris, as you have been for the last many years, that I have been allowed to play a significant role in your life. And it's been a kind of wonderful thing still to watch you growing and developing. And I think that this book, if you'll pardon me, is not a dark book. I think it's a book of light. I think that is compromised by the fact that before the serial killer in the book, John Gacy, dies, he looks up at a light bulb and says, "The light." But I think that this is a book about light. Is it preposterous?
No, I think you're right. I mean, it's like, it's an act of love or whatever. So, And it's, I mean, I really wanted to build, you know, I've always had this thing about wanting to keep George alive or whatever, you know, because he was this person who was very, very brilliant and talented, but I knew he would never achieve anything because he was too ill. So I've always wanted to like make him be a presence in the world or something. So, and I suppose in a way, this book, which is actually really about him, well, it's about me, but it, actually the George in it is not like the cutie pie having sex and doing drugs all the time, because George wasn't like that. It's just, so it's nice. So if in a way it's in that sense, I think it is because it's trying to keep his presence in the world some way. So,
and for the first time, this book has received glowing advance notices, but you got a very intelligent review in Kirkus, a starred review, and another one in Publishers Weekly, and this has never happened before. What would acceptance mean to you?
I don't know if I would really know what that is. So, I mean, I don't know. I've long since realized like that the work I do is never going to be, it's never going to be accepted. So, no, or not in a kind of an official way. So I don't even really know. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, maybe I'm at that point, you know, because I'm getting older and people go like, you know, he's been doing this a long time. We should give him a little bit of a pat on the head. You know, I think that's kind of where I am.
In one of the books, I think called Frisk, there's a dead body. And it came to me when I was writing about it for the Los Angeles Times that the excavation, that the exploration of this body was not a demented and ghoulish thing, although of course it was, but it was also an attempt to see if the place where the soul lived could be found. And I wanted to find a way to explain that on some level, these are spiritual and holy books as well. And that, you know, when we say the title in English of Proust's book, In Search of Lost Time, this is what it seems to me that this book is. It's in search of the lost time of your friendship with George Miles, who has never been centered in this way before. He's always been a projection of himself, a character of one kind or another. You bring us to understand why the George Miles that you present was so beautiful and important to you. Do you feel like you succeeded this time?
I felt when I finished it that I had done what I wanted to do. But I mean, it's really, you know, the book is very much, and it says it's very much like, I want people who like to really, you know, I don't want this to be like my other books. I want this book to find people or something, especially find people who knew him. But I mean, I felt, I'm a very meticulous writer and I'm a very, very disciplined writer. And when I finished it, I thought, okay, this is it. And I can't go any further with this. This did what I wanted to do. So I guess so.
Well, I thought it was an extraordinary piece of work, Dennis. And I do think it's as much a success about writing as it is about the past, about death, about the imagination, and that you've brought nearly impossible subjects to bear on one another by introducing figures like Santa Claus or the characters in The Heart is a Lonely Hunter. You build up the possibility of making the book, and you say that you built it almost like a bricklayer, that you don't cry when writing. This is not for you a cathartic book, that you don't believe in catharsis by and large as a literary device.
I was doing a lot of experimenting to find a place where I could kind of explode the emotion out, like really without, But I thought I was always aesthetically completely on top of it. It was just finding the right that. So it really, it is very, it's not cathartic, but I mean, that's really, all the emotion in there is very real. But I was always, I had to have a way to control it because I have to be able to control. So it's a, but I mean, it's not cathartic because I'm not past it. You know, it isn't like now I don't have to think about these things anymore. It's not like that at all. It's like, I did feel like I did the best I could to express exactly what he does to me.
Now, in the past, there have been people who've described your technique as being cold, but I think in this book, it's not that there isn't coldness, but you've eliminated that kind of refrigeration as a necessity for the emotions. And I think it's amazing that you were able to. Do you feel you did?
That was the goal. I mean, I've never done that before. I mean, in my poetry a little bit, but I've never done that before. That was like, I really needed to do that. I really wanted to do that. It was something that I felt like I'd never done. And I mean, George is as much the subject because it allows me to do that as, you know, anything, because he just brings it out. So I do. I mean, I can't be objective about it, but I do. I've never done anything like this before. So
I was amazed by it. I've been talking with Dennis Cooper. He is the author of a novel just published called I Wish, published by Soho Press. Thank you, Dennis, for joining me.
Thank you very much, Michael.
It's been a great privilege for me to have this talk with you.
Likewise,
you
know. Likewise, for sure.
I want to tell my listeners that due to the pandemic, Dennis and I have received vaccine shots before our in-person conversation, and we're 6 feet apart from each other in my residence. You can visit kcrw.com/bookworm for a podcast of today's show, also available at Apple, Spotify, and all other podcast services. It can also be listened to on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. I'm very lucky to have collaborators who've made it possible for me to do this at all. These collaborators are Alan Howard and Sean Sullivan. Our engineer is PJ Shahamat, a outside miracle himself. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.